This week, we are tracking the biggest trade of the year. Nothing is going to top what happened between Vegas and Buffalo involving Jack Eichel. And Darren Dreger, my buddy from TSN, had the scoop. We are going to track the fallout from Jack Eichel joining the Vegas Golden Knights. What do other teams in the National Hockey League do? But I'm most curious about what goes into tracking a story like this, and when do you decide to go with the scoop? The inside story from the insider on getting the big story. It's The Chirp with Darren Millard, with Darren Dreger.
Heads up! Oh, how'd that feel, old man?
What are you going to do? You!
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
Shut up!
Here he is at his nice professional desk. Like, I think I've got a good setup, but Gus, you've got, everybody calls you Gus because it was your uncle Gus, right?
No, Grandpa. Grandpa. In fact, great-grandfather, I believe. And until I was like 13, I had poker straight hair, but apparently when I was born, I had curly hair, and great-grandpa Gus also had curly hair. So my grandfather, Archie Dreger, saw me and said, oh, he looks like Grandpa Gus. And that was pretty much how it stuck. But I don't get a lot of that. Like, you know, Mark Spector, just the Western Mafia, right? Western Canadian Mafia, remember that. But it's all good.
So you were tracking this Jack Eichel story with great zeal, and it was a long one. Give us the impact of the trade, first of all, and where do you think the benefit from both sides were?
Yeah, well, I've said this a few times, so I don't mind saying it on The Chirp, but I sound like Kelly McCrimmon's biggest cheerleader when I talk about how this deal went down. From ownership down, I'm amazed. Look, everybody's goal, from owner to manager to coach to the custodial crew, want to win a Stanley Cup when you're employed by an NHL team. That's pretty obvious. I'm astounded, though, at the work that the Vegas Golden Knights continue to do to try and make that a reality. Now, maybe somewhere down the line, they're going to pay a price because you're giving up good young assets to acquire these star players. But time after time, it's happened, be it through free agency or in this case with Jack and other star players, it's through trade. So I would say this, Kelly McCrimmon, you know, he's the hunter, man. He watches very, very closely. Doesn't necessarily mean he acts over aggressively initially. He just, you know, wants to watch and see how things kind of come together. Maybe in that time frame, you know, you have a couple of conversations, in this case with Kevin Adams of the Buffalo Sabres. I mean, that's just doing your due diligence. You have to establish what that rate of return for a player, even though he's injured, or the magnitude of Jack Eichel actually is. And then you just sort of feel it out a little bit, but always staying at the forefront. And, yeah, there's lots of details. I'm sure there were tons of conversations that we're never going to be privy to between McCrimmon and Kevin Adams. But at the end of the day, obviously, very obviously, the best deal the Buffalo Sabres could make was the one that they made with the Vegas Golden Knights. And you're right down to the wire. It wasn't bluster. I mean, Brad Treliving and the Calgary Flames were in, just not to that degree. And in my opinion, when I look, there was speculation on Matthew Tkachuk, right? And I saw it, and you know me, we don't like to refute others' work. That's a dangerous game. We've all been wrong on occasion, but that one just, I'm like, okay, well, hold on a minute here. So they're going to trade Matthew Tkachuk. Calgary's off to a great start, or they're going to trade Monahan, or they're going to trade a key element in their lineup. And Jack isn't playing for another 3-4+ months. So is Calgary going to be able to survive all of that with the assets that they're going to have to give up? And so that didn't make a lot of sense to me, but Treliving was right in there. The Carolina Hurricanes, more tire kickers than the other two, but they were in there. So it was a long drawn out affair. I think that's pretty obvious. And from Jack's perspective, I know you interviewed him. He must be over the moon with the fact he can get on with his professional life and get on with his life. So in the end, it was a tough decision by the Buffalo Sabres, and probably not that difficult from the Vegas Golden Knights perspective, because when Jack is 100% healthy, oh man, you know, with all due respect to everything that the Golden Knights have up the middle of the ice, he's just going to make them that much better and a top contender again.
Did the price change at all during the 6 months, 7 months?
Yes, I don't know that it did with the Vegas Golden Knights, to be fair to that process. And frankly, I had heard Alex Tuch's name out there, but McCrimmon and Adams did a good job of keeping that under wraps, right? That's always a tough situation. We've both been in that world where, you know, even at the trade deadline, when it's, you know, your hair is on fire just trying to get stuff out, there's a pang of guilt when you're just almost recklessly throwing players' names out there, right? Because they've got families, and that can be a challenge. But I mean, honestly, until I tweeted the details of that deal, I did not know what, again, there was some suspicion Krebs might have to be involved. Tuch's name was out there, but not publicly. This is private stuff. So I think in the broader answer of your question, I think the deal had to change. I mean, the deal that Adams was probably looking for way back in the day was likely more involved and might have required bigger pieces, more. I don't know. I mean, I think Buffalo got great value for Jack, and you never know what those picks are going to turn out to be. So I think just the way that this dragged out, the fact Buffalo wouldn't eat any salary, that for sure would have changed a lot of the parameters, I think, for teams that maybe had to back out because of that.
I was skeptical on Buffalo's side because of the position that Kevin was in as a fresh general manager. I'm impressed. I come away with this pretty impressed with what he did.
Yeah. And look, if there's a general manager out there who tells you that, oh, no, I have autonomy, and I make decisions solely, and I have full support of my owner. Sure. I mean, you know, you do, but we all have bosses, right?
Yeah.
So, even though, again, you know, my impression was that Kim and Terry Pegula weren't actively involved conversation day by day by day, at the end of the day, for sure they had to be involved. I mean, you're talking about a $50 million player here, former captain, you know, face of the franchise for a few years, to be sure. So I think at times that could have complicated things a little bit. I guarantee you, you know, Kelly and George probably had conversations with Mr. Foley and just said, look, you know, we got an opportunity here to add a piece. There's some potential risk. I mean, he requires a procedure, and he's going to require a little bit of time to mend, but when he's healthy, look out, he's going to make us that much stronger. So that was probably the extent of the conversation or the convincing required from Vegas's perspective. But this would have been a challenging one because, you know, Buffalo also, Darren, you know this, Buffalo needed this saga to end. You know, it's not like Jack brought a big dark cloud that hovered over the organization. That's not fair to him. But he was never playing in Buffalo again. They were never going to mend fence. He deservedly so had a researched opinion on what the best procedure for his body is. And for whatever reason, Sabres medical people, the doctors in Buffalo, didn't agree. So not sure why that is, but you know, Jack's entitled to get the treatment, though the CBA doesn't say it that way. He's entitled to get the treatment that he thinks is the best course to get him back to being a star in the NHL. And here's hoping that plays out for him.
So we know what it means to Vegas. What does this do for Buffalo going forward?
You know, Alex Tuch's a good player. You know that better than anyone. You know, he's more or less a local guy. So there's going to be a little bit of influence there. Do we know what Peyton Krebs is or is going to be? I don't. I always have lots of time for, well, the three positions for me that matter most, with all due respect to the great wingers out there. But you know, you have to be patient, take time with your goaltenders. We know that roughly, historically, used to be you didn't really know what you had in a good defenseman until he played 300 NHL games, which is a lot. So how can we say what Peyton Krebs is? You know, we don't know. I think that he's probably going to be a good player, developmentally speaking. One thing I do know is that he's in the right environment for that. And not that he wasn't in Vegas, but you're talking about a different timeline, right?
Right.
Like Pete DeBoer and the Vegas Golden Knights, they're there to win. You know, Don Granato and the Buffalo Sabres, they know that they're a long way away from that. They you know, they've had a good start here. But I like the fit for Peyton there, because Donnie Granato, you know, you look at developmentally how strong he is, so good. You know, he's a solid teacher. He comes from a background of dealing with young players, inexperienced players who are going to make a ton of mistakes. So if they believe that Peyton is going to be a centerman, then there's going to be some growing pains with that at the NHL level. But I think that Buffalo is fully on board with that. They were pretty happy with the deal. I can tell you that. They thought they got a great return. So, you know, when you got the bluster from the media, oh, Kelly fleeced Kevin Adams, or you know what? I didn't think they were going to get that level of return for Jack. Well, then that tells you that you probably both sides made a deal that they can live with.
You know, agents were watching this with great interest to see how it would play out with Jack and his wishes for the ADR surgery, the artificial disc replacement process. Does that kind of crack the door open for that to happen more, where players take control of their own medical choices?
Well, it might, provided that you're willing to fight. So
right.
This is what was interesting to me. And I don't blame the Players Association for not attacking that clause in their last round of negotiations with the National Hockey League. You know, you've got guaranteed contracts. We don't need to get into all of that. But I don't think that that's the spirit of that clause or that article, to be fair. I think that it has to be within reason. And I'm sure that Pat Brisson and JP Barry and Jack Eichel and the Players Association felt like they had gone beyond reason, they being the Buffalo Sabres, and just being rigid. And no matter what sort of medical information, you know, man, I mean, Jack did his research. You know, I referred to him as Dr. Eichel the other day, right? On, you know, he invested the time and
more than anybody, like more, he was knee deep in.
Yeah, for sure he was. And, you know, Pat Brisson was working 5-6 hours a day on this, and JP Barry was there from a legal perspective, and they'd gathered all of this medical intelligence and kept shipping that to teams. They kept shipping that back to the Buffalo Sabres, and it just didn't matter. What's unfortunate in this, and I'll say it, nobody else has to say it, you know, it's too bad that there couldn't have been some resolution in the summer, right? Because if this is resolved in the summer, Jack is on the ice. And Jack is going to play for the U.S. Olympic team. Now, that's just a matter of fact. So some things have been lost in all of this that Jack Eichel is never going to get back. And that's a tough one. So how does it change moving forward, to your point? I think it's going to have to be a case by case, because, you know, in covering these things, when you start going after items inside the collective bargaining agreement, guess what happens? It's okay. Well, we'll tweak that. We'll amend that. But what are you giving us, right? So the owners aren't going to want to concede on that. But nor does the National Hockey League want to be bogged down in another grievance. And that's where this was headed. As you know, if the PA didn't believe that Eichel was going to be traded last weekend, now, the belief was by some around the Players Association, he was going to Calgary last weekend, so that didn't work out for them. But they backed off a little bit because they were told by all parties that Jack was going to be traded. No sense filing the grievance, but that grievance was coming, and maybe it has to happen in the future.
So you and Andrew Peters kind of broke this story at the same time, and yeah. Good on the instigators and Andrew. But you were tracking this thing from day one, and you've broken a ton of stories over the course. Where does this rank in stress level and the engagement level and how you are going about covering the story?
Yeah, you know, and I kind of tipped my hand a little bit there in the last answer. I know Jack Eichel as well as most reporters would know Jack. I've interviewed him a few times. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I know the man personally. But this one kind of didn't feel right for me because of what I said a minute ago. You know, like, I have been a fan of Jack Eichel from the moment he stepped onto the national scene, not just as an NHL player, but before that, and watching this young guy develop, right? I like the way he plays. And then when he burst onto the scene in Buffalo, you know, you'd see him just take off every once in a while, and away he'd go, and you go, oh, geez, there he goes. And it would be a highlight play. And then things just went south for him. And lots of reasons. excuse me, and health is a big part of that. So first and foremost, normally I don't invest in stories because they're fleeting, right? You know, you break a signing, you break a trade, and okay, well, what's happening in 5 minutes? Because the world is basically forgotten aside from where that team is going or where he's left. Everybody in our world, in the insider world, is like, okay, that one's behind us. Let's move on to the next one. But this one, I think, matters more because of the process and because everything that Jack has had to endure, and I'll be cheering for him. I want to see this guy do well, and I also want to see how much impact he has on the Vegas Golden Knights. Because as Pete DeBoer and Max Pacioretty was on our podcast a while ago talking about Chandler Stephenson and how this guy just must not get a fair shake.
Right.
And I think that's true. You know that. You can see it. But now we could stop talking about the Vegas Golden Knights needing a star center, because when Jack is healthy again, they're going to have that star center. But yeah, you know what? I'm glad it's over. And I certainly was appreciative of being among those who was first and forefront on top of the story, for sure. I get a kick out of, I don't waste a lot of time, and I choose that word accurately, waste. I don't waste a lot of time poring over replies and social media and all that. But the stuff that I enjoy most is the critical stuff. You know, the stuff where guys are chirping me. Oh, great. Another Eichel update. Well, what are you going to tell us? He brushed his teeth this morning. Oh, that's a good one, Gregor. Way to go. I find that stuff amusing. So no different than the Mitch Marner thing when he went through his negotiation and everybody thought that I was basically attached to the hip with his dad, Paul, and all that. I find that stuff amusing. So fortunately and unfortunately, my amusement won't be peaked anymore because of Jack Eichel, but I'm glad it's over and we can move on to something else.
Do you type replies and then delete them before you send them?
Nah, I used to. You know what I will do? I am a creeper. So instantly, if somebody tweets at me or hits a reply and it's just flat out snarky, look, you tell me to F off, I'm blocking you. I have no time for that, right? Let's have a respectful conversation if I'm willing to do that. But I'll go into somebody's bio, like through the whole Chicago thing, and there was nothing lighthearted and will never be anything lighthearted about that. But I had a doctor in, Manitoba come at me over something. And I'm like, come on, man. Like, really? Like, you know, shouldn't you have better things to worry about than what I'm saying, you know, in the toy box of the news department, which is sports and covering hockey? So on occasion, I will DM people when I feel like they at least deserve some response. And sometimes that works out well, where you'll get people who go, you know what, now that you've explained it, yeah, I can see that, you know, sorry, I was having a bad day. I shouldn't have been so snarky. And then you love others like this doctor, man. He would have debated for the next 3 days. I just disengaged and said, all right, well, we'll agree to disagree. And off we went. But that's about as deep as I dive into Twitter or social media.
Bring the doctor on trade deadline day. It'll keep you busy for a couple of hours. Yeah. So I liken it to kids wanting a dog, and they ask their mom and dad a couple of times in a row, and then they have to lay off for a little bit before they go back. When you're looking for information on a Jack Eichel or a big story, how often do you return to the manager that you think's involved, or or the agent, or the player?
Yeah, almost always, right? You know, because you know, it's not rocket science here. You know, those are the primary guys. And if you're able to develop a relationship on that front, then it cuts out a lot of uncertainty and maybe bad intelligence, to be fair. Right. And maybe that's cost some people, you know, over the last while, or just historically speaking. Now, sources come in many different shapes and sizes. Don't get me wrong. You know, sometimes it can be, I was going to say a trainer, but that's not fair, because I don't even remember the last time a trainer reached out to me on anything. Maybe an equipment guy historically, stuff like that. But what I mean by that is people who are paying attention and, hey, are you hearing anything? Because I got a weird vibe around the room. That's kind of the old school way. This one played out so publicly And I tried not to, right? Like I tried not to name Vegas or Calgary until honestly the last week. You know, others were talking about Vegas and Calgary, and I just kept referring to the teams. And part of that is out of respect to their process. But then again, you know, the players, because as soon as you identify the teams, well, we just talked about social media, you know, every Flames fan is ripping through their roster and going, well, we can live without that guy and we can live without that guy. So if you've got good relationships, and look, I've been ignored by the best of them. You know, it's not like every general manager in the National Hockey League, you know, responds to me on speed dial here. That's also sometimes they tip their hand with that, right? When you don't get a response immediately or within an hour or two, like, okay, well, I'm going to scrape around in a different direction here because there must be more to it. But I can tell you there were different layers of frustration with this one. Jack's frustration, I think, was pretty obvious. You know, he felt like he was being held hostage in this process, and it feels like he kind of was. You know, the frustration from the agents because they were pushing so hard, had gathered all the medical intelligence. They were working on clubs trying to make a deal work for Buffalo. And then in this case, you know, you had Vegas. I'm sure that Kelly McGrimmon felt like, you know, the deal that he offered could have been made a long time ago, right? But Vegas has to go, or Buffalo has to go through its process to get to the point where they were finally able to sign off on it. So there were lots of cooks in this kitchen, man. There were many.
Let's put a bow on it then. When do you decide to go with it, scoop and the story? Like, how do you determine that? What puts you over the edge?
That's a good question.
And that's big. Yeah. That's big picture. It could be any deal that you've done. Yeah, but just more of a philosophy.
No, it is. It is. And you know what? A big part of that has to do with the relationships that we're talking about here too, right? I had a pretty good indication that deal was going to happen the night before, like basically done. You know, if it's two teams or maybe a trade that came together pretty quickly and I haven't been working on it for as long as I did, then maybe you go, hey, to Twitter, here we go. I'm hearing that player X is on his way to Vegas, you know, some details to work out, but it's real close. Maybe I do that the night before the trade is announced. Maybe in this case, because we've been dealing with it for months, I just thought, you know what? There was no fear that it was getting out. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning, something like that in the East. So, I mean, I was probably the only person crazy enough to still be awake. So I knew that it wasn't going to get out, but, and again, because of the investment from my standpoint with all the parties we've already talked about, you know, I wasn't going to burn somebody in the process. So this was one of the rare times where I had to wait for not just one green light, but a couple of green lights to go with it.
Do you bounce it off people?
No,
so this, you're in this.
Yeah. No, I shouldn't say that. It depends on what we're talking about here. Like normally, you know, Bob McKenzie is in retirement mode now, but you know, when we're in the fight, when we're in the thick of it around trade deadline, where you're working on a deal of this magnitude, for sure, I would bring him into the mix. And, and Pierre LeBrun and Chris Johnson in this case were involved. We've got a group chat that we continue to feed, but when you get to the witching hour and it's midnight, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. I mean, you have to make the call. And then likewise the following morning, I think Andrew Peters tweeted something about he's going to Vegas or the deal Eichel deal is about to get done to Vegas. That was like at 7:18 a.m. East. I was like, it's like 4:20 in the Pacific region.
Oh, I know, because my phone started ringing.
So I'm not going to lie. You weren't the first person I thought of out there, but you were among the first, because I was like, ooh, that's an early start to the day. So yeah, I mean, you do in that sense, you would bounce it off. But again, because I had been so respectful through this process, the sourcing on this from all corners was impeccable and there really wasn't much room for mistake.
Do you have a wall of all the deals that you've broken, like the big deals,
no,
the Wall of Fame or anything like that?
No, no, I don't. And I probably should for a couple. You know, the only one that I recall was my first big one, and it was back in the day at Sportsnet, and God rest his soul, John Ferguson Sr. You know, there are names on my cell phone that I just can't erase. John Ferguson Sr. is still, now I should call it one time and see who answers, right? It's probably changed hands about 17 times. And the other one is Brad McCrimmon. I've never been able to delete Beast's cell number. It just stays there. So anyway, to go back, it's a Joe Thornton trade from Boston to San Jose. Marco Sturm, Wayne Primeau.
Yeah.
Trying to think who the other elements of that trade were. But John Ferguson, I'm sitting on my couch about to watch, it was a Saturday, I believe, about to watch Hockey Night in Canada. And he calls, and I'd use John on a number of things. He was just a old school good source, right? And kept his ear to the ground, and I loved him. And he goes, hey, you hearing anything out of Boston? I'm like, no, not really. Oh, I think we just got Joe Thornton. And I'm like, oh, no. And I wasn't really an insider at that point, man. I was a host, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, you've done the same thing. I mean, stuff comes across your desk. You're like, okay, well, what do I do with this? And that was pre-social media. So I post that on sportsnet.ca, or I guess that's what it was back then. And I got to tell you, man, that was the longest 90 minutes of my life, because again, there's no social media. So, yeah, you know, you have to wait till the Boston Bruins, until you get that email from the Boston Bruins or for the San Jose Sharks announcing that they've made this trade. And I'm watching SportsCenter. Bob McKenzie doesn't have it. Nobody's saying anything about it on CBC. I'm like, oh, I'm going to burn. But I had a couple of sources, so I felt pretty good. But man, that one will stick with me forever.
That was a great John Ferguson impersonation.
No, nah, I don't know. It wasn't very good.
It wasn't. It was good.
I got another quick one just with John Ferguson. So I just told you that I don't delete the cell number. Yeah. I'm jumping on an NHL charter years ago, a playoff charter, and John Sr. has passed, obviously. Scotty Burnside is sitting in the aisle, and Scotty is not a great flyer. He's a bit of a nervous flyer. I drop my cell phone, and I pick it up, and it's dialing John Ferguson Sr. Just randomly. I mean, it must have glitched in my phone or whatever. Yeah. And I show it to Burnside. He's like, I can't even say what he said, but he's like, are you kidding me? Because I'm getting off this airplane. Like, what is happening here? Oh, God.
You like sticking it to guys every now and then.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Maybe even more than every now and then.
Oh, yeah.
Chicago.
Yeah.
Are they going to hire a new coach and a new manager? Are they going to stick with the interim? Or it's very rare that a interim manager makes a coaching change.
I was just going to say, if they gas Kyle hire somebody to manage him after getting him to fire Jeremy Calton, that's a tough look for an organization who's been more than kicked in the shins over the last while, to be sure. You know, this one didn't entirely surprise me, though, to be fair to the process. I mean, you know, the Jeremy Calton rumors had been there last season, certainly drifted into the offseason, and they just decided that they weren't going to make a change. I can't imagine that Kyle Davidson makes that change without first having, you know, the full support of ownership, the Wirtz family. And then secondly, and maybe more importantly than that, you got to have that conversation with Kane and with Taves and your leaders inside that room. And, you know, if their determination as veteran players who have won a lot, highly decorated individuals, is that you need a coaching change to get something backtracking on ice, then I guess Kyle didn't have a choice to make. But it's going to be interesting. You know, Derek King is there now. I liked his comment. Was it after his first game or when he was out? He says, like, I just want to keep it light. You know, well, it's hard to get any heavier than it's been in Chicago over the last while, including now the dismissal of a coach. So I thought maybe, you know, what do I know? But I thought Chicago was going to be much better this year on ice.
So I mean, did I.
A lot of, yeah. I mean, just with the moves, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury, Seth Jones, you know, Taves is back healthy, all of that. I would have at least put the middle of the pack to above middle, you know, to keep it interesting. And they haven't been able to do that. So I don't know. Maybe things will track in a different direction for them now.
You hearing any rumblings out of Colorado? What's happening there?
No, that's another one on our radar for whatever reason. But Joe is such a, you know, he's like Mark Bergevin to a degree. You know, they kind of manage almost in a swarm. And what I mean by that is they're patient. And then they go, okay, bam, let's do this. But we're going all in with whatever this is. And, you know, Colorado's had some injury problems. I'm not making excuses for them. But they definitely need to be better than what we've seen. I mean, that goes without saying here. So Joe is incredibly patient. Mark Bergevin, incredibly patient, but more Montreal than Colorado for me. I just think Colorado is better, and Colorado is going to find its way here in the not too distant future. I don't know what the heck is going on with the Montreal Canadiens, aside from the obvious, right? You know, no Shea Weber, you know, you lose Carey Price, but Jake Allen's been fine, you know, in goal. You know, Phil Deneau, Paul Byron, Edmondson's hurt. I mean, they've got so many issues in Montreal. I don't even know where to start, but what's so shocking to me about how bad they've been is, you know, I remember having this conversation with Paul Maurice just prior to the playoffs, and he said, I'm going to watch a ton of tape on the Montreal Canadiens, and only because of their defensive structure and how detailed that team was. You know, their penalty kill was sparkling. You know, just everything about how they covered the ice made them really difficult to play against. And, you know, lo and behold, they go to the Stanley Cup final. So I understand you take those principal pieces out of your lineup and there's going to be struggle. But it's not like Dom Ducharme just, you know, took his playbook and lit it on fire. Like, they're not playing or shouldn't be playing completely different systems and playing with a different philosophy than the one that they used to get to the Stanley Cup. I don't get it. I don't get it.
Is Bergevin going to sign there?
I don't think so. No. And that doesn't help either, right? When you've got that lingering, if you're Jeff Molson, you're watching your team implode on the ice. You've extended your coach. So you're probably not going to ditch Dom Ducharme.
Yeah.
You basically have to be patient because you've got some injury situations, including Price, that may remedy themselves sooner rather than later. But then you've got that, you know, that cloud hanging over that is Mark Bergevin. I don't know. I haven't talked to Berge about this specifically. I'm not so sure if he had a do-over, he wouldn't do things differently and take the contract that was offered in the summer. And the only reason I say that is out of respect to some of the managers who are out there and haven't landed a job, right? When you're talking about paying jobs of $3 million, $3.5 million or higher in the management world of the National Hockey League, the job you have is better than being on the unemployment line. And Burge is a real good manager. Don't get me wrong, but Ray Shero is a good general manager. You know, he's won a lot in his time.
Jimmy Rutherford, yeah.
Jimmy, for sure, go down the list here. You know, Dave Nonis has never gotten another sniff at being a manager. So those guys, those jobs are tough to find. It could be a difficult one for him.
It makes me think that there's, like, he's got eyes on, like, if you're not going to sign, you must have plans somewhere else. That, to me, that's where I was going with it.
Or you're right, and maybe somewhere else is just taking a break.
Right.
You know? God, those guys work hard. They do. I mean, around the clock, you know, I joked about who's up at 1 o'clock Eastern. Well, probably Kelly McCrimmon and probably till 1 Pacific. You know what I mean? Like, that's just the investment those guys make. But I've heard the rumblings in the past of Berge wanting to step away. But I think, you know, you get to the Stanley Cup final and that refuels a lot of things. And look, he's probably earned whatever he's asking for. So I get it, but when you're on the outside looking in, sometimes you don't always get back to the inside.
Talked about Chicago. Do you think Joel Quenneville coaches again, or is this one of those clouds that just follows you?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you were participating on the Zoom call last week with Bettman and Daly, and I believe they had me unmute the first time I tried to ask a question. And then they came back to me in that conference, and I still couldn't get the whole apparatus to work. So it was 0-2. And the question I wanted to ask the commissioner was, explain the process of reinstatement for Joel Quenneville and or Stan Mullen. And what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And so I asked the question after the fact via email, and I got an in-person meeting with the commissioner. Well, okay, but are we talking a month from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now? Like, what is that timeline? And I don't think that the commissioner or the NHL has a firm answer for that. You know, as long as, you know, do we know that the Chicago investigation is case closed? It isn't yet, right? We don't know that. Who knows how far this is going to go? Until that is settled, whatever that is, it's going to be a tough world for Joel to get back into. It's going to be tough, and likewise for Bowman. But what we do know is if he intends to coach again, he's got to meet with Commissioner Bettman, and Commissioner Bettman is going to determine whether or not it's time for reinstatement. And we have no idea when that might be.
Does this make it easier or tougher for Babcock to coach again? Because he kind of got brought back into it. Not the same philosophy, but you know how that it works.
Yeah, no, I get it. I don't know, man. It's a tough one. It's a tough one because I swapped text messages with Babcock a couple of weeks ago, and nothing NHL related. I might have probably tried to poke him because the Leafs were going sideways, and you know, and he didn't.
You're trying to squeeze something.
Yeah, he didn't take the bait at all. He just said, "Oh man, I'm having so much fun here. The kids are great. You know, I'm enjoying my time at the University of Saskatchewan. All that." It's a good question. I mean, financially, these coaches don't have to coach again, but it's in their DNA. You know, Mike Babcock isn't coaching the University of Saskatchewan because he needs the honorarium or he needs another tracksuit. I mean, that's pretty obvious. He's there for family reasons. You know, his wife's family is from there, so it's an opportunity to spend some time. But if you don't love the art, the craft of coaching, you're not doing that. You're not doing that. Yeah. So, he'll in answer to your question, he'll coach again. Do I think that there's an owner, not general manager, an owner with the gumption, the intestinal fortitude, whatever is needed to hire Babcock? I'm not so sure about that, because beyond what it's going to bring to your organization, and he's galvanizing, isn't he? I mean, he's got former players that are after him all the time. And everybody's always going to play the minor card and everything that went down in Toronto. I understand all of that. But he's hands-on, and he doesn't care who the boss is. You know, if he wants a centerman and that centerman is available, then he's going to the manager or he's going to the owner to say, we need to invest in this guy because this guy is going to help us win a Stanley Cup. He knows that there are lanes. Mike Babcock knows there are lanes, right? He just doesn't know how to stay in his lane when it comes to hockey operations.
Who's better, Carolina or Florida?
Ooh, Florida's pretty good. Right now, Florida is showing me that they're better, but I don't know that to be the case long-term, right? Everything about that Florida Panthers team is fun to watch. You know, their goaltending is $10 million goaltending. You know, Barkov, I could watch him all day. Like, just, you know, I talked about Jack Eichel and how I love watching him. Barkov for me is similar in, you know, he just plays the game the right way. The old cliche, but he definitely does. Jonathan Huberto, you know, unfortunately for Florida, they're going to get to a place real quick. I mean, they're a cap team, but they're going to get to a place real quick where so many other teams are. Tampa Bay, Toronto, go down the list of where you're almost capped out, right? Like, you know, I think Barkov left lots of money on the tape. I do. And he signed a mammoth deal, but he deserves more for the quality of the player that he is. So then they've got Huberto coming, and it's another one, and it's another one, and another one. So they're in the win now mode. Not that Carolina isn't. I think, who would be surprised if the Carolina Hurricanes find a way? I appreciate what Florida is doing through a real tough time. I mean, Andrew Burnett, here's the keys to the Cadillac. I mean, Andrew Burnett you know, was handpicked by Joel Quenneville. I don't think they knew each other well, but, you know, he was just handpicked as an assistant coach. He had no idea what he was going to be in for, right? And they don't appear like they've skipped a beat even a little bit. And, you know, hey, let's give Brew a little credit. I mean, he's been around hockey his entire life. But doesn't that give you the sense of full buy-in from the players? You know, like, hey, I don't know that they feel bad for Joel. It doesn't matter one way or another, but they're not going to let what Joel Quenneville is a part of and that dark story that goes back to 2010, they're not going to allow that to derail where they're at as a group. So I got a lot of time for the players in Florida.
How do you get your lighting so good? Like, even with the Movember mustache, you're still just killing me right now.
I know. Well, look.
Like, I look like Casper, and you are brilliant in a studio.
You know, it was kind of a crazy scenario. We're probably a year and a half, 2 years into the setup I have here. And a guy by the name of Christian, who's a lighting, a camera, just a jack of all trades, as most of those people are, right? He literally came into my house. So, you know, sold my old house in a pandemic, then went into full frantic renovation mode of this one. And one of the first things I needed was the office. So he came into my house in a hazmat suit. I mean, and did everything. Like, we've got this fancy studio quality lighting set up here in front of me. I've got this studio camera with a remote focus and all that nonsense, which they don't allow me to play with anymore. They've dismantled that and they do it back in studio. I've got full audio, man. I'll tell you what, I know, it's impressive. The only thing, so I've paid for two things in this office, right? I paid for the built-in behind me, which was grossly expensive. And I
books on.
Yeah. And I ordered this Live Edge white oak desk, which you can't see.
Yeah.
And I know you're a bit of a nerd when it comes to that stuff too, right? You like the quality stuff. Yeah, I know you do. So this one got a little bit away on me. It was expensive.
Did you have it built or did you?
Yeah, I had it custom built. Nice. To a point, I went to the kiln, to a farm not far from here, Holly and I, and we picked the actual slab of tree that was used.
No.
The white oak. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I could see you'd have coffee in your hand. You'd just be like walking around.
I was, but you know what I was more impressed with than the white oak was I saw three deer, and I was like, and a big pond full of geese. I'm like, holy smokes. 20 years ago, man, I would have been saddling up to this guy going, okay, it's hunting season. We're going to get this.
Or you were going to put an offer in to buy the place because you moved like at the whim.
I know. I do. And I'm trying to convince Holly to move again, but she's not biting. So
you took down a picture. Like last time I talked to you, there was a picture on the, did you get rid of the picture of you, me and Kyprios and throw it out? What happened to it? That's on the bookshelf?
Okay. Hold on.
Oh, it's on your desk.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah. How many years ago was that? Like, I look way younger and my hair isn't gray. So we've got to be pushing. That's got to be close to 20 years.
Yeah, probably at least 2021. Yeah. 16 years. Yeah.
You still have those pads too, don't you?
Those were good pads. I don't have them anymore, but I wish I did. I look at those pads. I wish I did. Beast pads.
You know what I remember from that game? I don't know if you'll remember this. Well, other than playing
a charity game in Oshawa or something.
Other than playing on a line with Kippy, who, by the way, people never, you know, for the average hockey fan out there, I mean, Kipper was a terrific OHL player. Like, he was a goal scorer. Yeah, 63, I think, wasn't it that year? And then you get stiffs like me out there playing with ex-players. I mean, Kippy, God love him. You know, he was a fringe player, certainly at the end of his career. And then you play in a charity game like this, and he is like flying out there and firing BBs from the blue line. But what I remember about that game, I don't know if you remember it. I stick check Ron Ellis. Oh. So I was chasing from behind on a back check, which is crazy in and of itself. And I stick checked and got the puck away. And it was maybe four or five shifts later, he friggin' elbowed me in the corner and leaned in and said, "Don't ever do that again." Yeah. There's no stick checking of the former pros.
No. And it's a cool story to tell, though.
Yeah, well.
You know what I remember about that game is we ran out of beer in the at the party after.
That sounds about right.
This has been tons of fun. Appreciate it. And send me your lighting guy. Send me the number of the lighting guy. Kippy, by the way, Kippy's back on the radio. He's doing great. It's good to hear.
Yeah, I do so much radio. I've heard a couple of segments that he's done. I mean, Kipper is he's good TV, he's good radio, right? Yeah. And the reason it is because he's not afraid to say something. Yeah. He's not afraid to share his opinion. It's not always supported by the masses, but who cares? He's good TV, good radio.
How many times a week do you get asked to do something like this? 15?
No, I mean, if you lump in all the radio that I do, it would be pushing 10, I would say. Yeah, not as much as you think. It was actually more in the off season because you had so many kids in university programs and whatnot. Like, I don't know about you, man, but there's like 10 million podcasts, right? Like Ray and I, the Ray and Greg's podcast.
Yours and mine are the best, but there is 10 million.
That should go without saying, but you know, we thought, okay, well, we're going to come into this thing, perfect timing. You know, there's a handful of them, hockey related, all that. That summer, we're in season three now. It was like 1,000 launched, and there's probably 10,000 more. But I get a lot of those requests. But you know what? I'm very selective. Very, very selective. I don't do that many.
Well, that goes really to my heart. We got to go. Bob Bender's given me the wrap-up sign 20 times, and we're both
sorry, Bob.
We're two hosts, two TV people, just blowing off the producer.
Like, well, here's another kipper, and we could both talk a pit bull off a meat wagon.
Exactly. Two peas in a pot, as Kipper would say.
Yeah.
Thanks to Double D Darren Dreger for joining us on the Chirp with Darren Millard. In case you couldn't tell, I could probably talk to Gus Darren Dreger all day. We first met when I was 20. He tried to sewer me when I was covering a Manitoba provincial election in Russell, Manitoba. And he was the correspondent for the local radio station in Brandon. I was working out of Yorkton. And he tried to go around my back and sewer me in a fun way with my boss at the time. And we bonded over that. And he was my boss in Brandon Radio for a long time. And we've remained friends, even though we're on opposite sides of the country now, and tons of fun. He and Holly actually took me in when I first moved to Toronto on Wagon Trail Way in Toronto. So there's some useless information for you along the way. We'll get back to Darren Dreger at some point during this season. But does that not cover it all? Hearing all those stories and then the information. That's why you listen to The Chirp with Darren Millard. Hit that like button. Smash the subscribe button. The subscribe button is the best thing in the world that you can do for this podcast. So look for it right now as soon as you're done. And we can't wait to chat with you next week on The Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard.